Brad Sesmatt Show, broadcasting live from the Skyview Network Studios.
So the Cardinals are bringing Brett Hundley in today for a workout. Now, what does that exactly mean? Okay, 2 weeks before the draft, is it just bringing in a quarterback because you want to take a look at everybody and kick the tires? Or is it because the Cardinals believe at number 24 they would take Brett Hundley? Is that a reach? I think it is. Is it later in the draft, in the second round? This can't simply be because they want a little bit of publicity that the kid from Chandler High that went to UCLA is going to be drafted in a couple of weeks, so let's bring him in. Brett Hundley on campus at the Cardinals facility today. I want to talk about that a little bit as the show moves on. There are NFL news and notes involving the quarterbacks all over the place. I'll get to those in a couple of minutes. Montini wrote today in the Arizona Republic, and I like EJ. I mean, there's certain people that when they write something and they bring the sledgehammer, it's appropriate. So the Diamondbacks asked a guy that's sitting behind home plate to change out of his Dodger shirt into a Diamondback shirt. The guy is paying, according to Montini, over $3,000 for the suite. And then because he's on television in that suite, the Diamondbacks are saying you can't wear Dodger gear. So I want to talk about that on the show today. Again, last night, must-see TV for me. Like, my wife is watching, I don't know, Two Broke Girls. There was a guy on Two Broke Girls last night. Eric, do you ever watch Two Broke Girls?
No.
Yeah.
I don't even know what that is.
It's 20-year-old humor. And the guy that was on Two Broke Girls last night took my daughter to prom a couple years back.
Oh, wow.
So my wife is like, we have to watch Austin. Austin is on here. And his whole role is he's being hit on by these girls. You know, they want to sleep with him. That's like, my daughter went on a date with this dude. I don't want to see this. I want to watch the baseball game. So I had to recruit myself to my den. You know, I had to shut the door and watch baseball last night. I couldn't watch Two Broke. What are you, nuts? Then I walk back out there and she's watching Dancing with the Stars. I don't know. I've been married to this woman for 26 years. That stuff's garbage. I mean, why aren't you watching baseball, for crying out loud? It was a great game last night. And your sons, clearly not my sons, thank God they're finishing the season tonight. So we have a busy show ahead. Brock Huard is going to be with us, ESPN college football analyst, good friend of the show. He's been back at ESPN breaking down the quarterbacks because that's what they do on the college front with the draft 2 weeks away. I want to talk to him about Mariota, Winston. What does it mean that Hundley is here? And also, Brock is based in Seattle. This whole Russell Wilson, no progress on his contract, talking about baseball, where does that fit in? And would he trade Philip Rivers if he's the Chargers to the Titans and they take Mariota? So there's a lot going on around the NFL we'll get to with Brock Huard. Paul Coro is going to be with us a little bit later in the show. Paul deserves hazard pay, whatever benefits AZ Central has in the way of putting their riders in harm's way. Paul has earned those times 10. He's had to watch crapola again for the fifth year in a row. I mean, we all know the Titanic, the boat sinks at the end, okay? For 5 years, I think Paul's known, for the most part, the boat sinks. I've got nothing here. So I want to talk to Paul about Jeff's job better not be in jeopardy, Jeff Hornacek. And if they're going to give this whole line about how we're this close, yeah, you're this close to the bottom. You're not even this close to the playoffs. So shut up. Should I be that grumpy today, Eric? I mean, I don't want to hear excuses.
I like when you ask me how you should feel.
Yeah,
you
how should
just
I feel?
Feel the way you feel?
How
just
should feel I feel
the way
about
you feel.
This?
I am not a therapist. I am merely a producer.
I need therapy watching this crap. I need therapy the way they've played this year. It's another year that's gone. 5 years of my life, your life, all of your lives wasted. No playoffs.
If they lose tonight, it will mark the worst ever ending to a season. They'll end the season, I think, 1-10 or 1-11.
I don't even care if they win tonight.
It doesn't matter.
Some nonsensical person will say, does this give you momentum into the offseason? Shut up.
It's sad. The Coyotes.
Go away.
The Coyotes and the Suns have basically been playing exhibition games for like the last month and a half. It's sad.
So I'm not going to drop dead today on this show. I know some of you wish I would when I'm like this, but gosh almighty, get the Suns out of here. Thank goodness the baseball team's off to a good start. Let's get you caught up on some things on my mind in the world of sports. Brought to you by the Honda Resort and Casino. Honda Resort and Casino, just outside of Pine Top in the beautiful White Mountains. I can decompress. I can head up to the White Mountains. I can go to the Sunrise Ski Resort. You know, in the summertime, they let you ride your bikes up and down the resort. That's pretty cool at Sunrise. But you can stay at the Honda Resort and Casino and get away from it all. Head over to Sunrise. Maybe this summer you want to make your plans to get up to the White Mountains and go do some fishing, go do some hiking, get away from it all, what you can do at the Honda Resort and Casino. You can stay there, great rooms, pull down to the slots, have some great fun, relax, get away from it all, eat some food, and before you know it, and it's good food, really good food, before you know it, you come back down here, there's some entertainment there, you can listen to some music, sing along, whatever it may be. And have a great time and do it at the Honda Resort and Casino. Honda Resort and Casino, just outside of Pine Top in the beautiful White Mountains. That is the Honda Resort and Casino. ESPN college football analyst Brock Huard here in a couple of minutes. So what are we to make about Brett Hundley visiting the Cardinals today? Now, it's no secret I've done a lot of stories on Brett Hundley and that I'm a huge fan of his. That said, I'm about the Cardinals getting somebody eventually to replace Carson Palmer. Everybody's excited about this is going to be the year for the Cardinals, and I have to be the wet blanket and say, I don't know. Carson got hurt twice last year. Twice. I don't know. He's in his mid-30s. Yeah, when he's on the field, he looked great. Is the quarterback class, here's where Steve Keim has to be on this. And Bruce Arians, is the quarterback class of this year's draft better than the quarterback class that will come out next year? Because they have to know at some point they have to groom a potential replacement, the guy. And you can go out in free agency and do that, but I'd rather see them get somebody, draft them, grow them. Have they determined that Logan Thomas is not going to be that guy long term? Why else would you bring Brett Hundley in here? Okay. I mean, why else? Unless you're looking at this and saying it's the nice thing to do, it's the hometown thing to do, we'll get some attention out of it. The draft's a few weeks away. And if you don't think that that's not part of some organization's plan is let's just make sure we shove NFL down your throat every day. I'm not saying that's what's going on with the Cardinals, but every team is looking for their advantage to get interest, spike interest in the draft. Is Brett Hundley a Bruce Arians type of quarterback? We'll talk to Brock Huard about that in about 8 minutes. Then there's the Chargers up in Eugene, Oregon, working out Marcus Mariota today. It seems to me, and we've been talking about this for the better part of a month. Peter King and I spent 5 minutes last week on our weekly segment talking about this whole Phillip Rivers, Marcus Mariota deal, where Mariota would go to the Titans, they would trade him to the Chargers, or the Chargers would trade up with Phillip Rivers. The thing is, at some point, the Titans have to be allowed to speak to Phillip Rivers' agent. At some point. Because there's not a chance that the Tennessee Titans would make a deal with Phillip Rivers in the last year of his contract and not have certainty that he is going to stay with them. They would have to agree on a new deal. That's just how it would have to go. Has that happened as of yet? I don't know. So Mariota working out for the Chargers today just reinforces this notion that San Diego wants to move up and that they want to get a quarterback. Jameis Winston, and the Chargers, to my knowledge, have not met with Winston yet. So this is them working out Mariota. Winston, for you Chicago Bear fans, is meeting with the Bears today. Now, Jeffrey is a terrific receiver, but you don't have Brandon Marshall anymore, and you can draft whoever you want. If you don't have the bullets offensively, and you bring Jameis Winston in there, does that make sense? I want to talk to Brock about this. Jameis Winston threw 65 touchdown passes in 2 seasons. Eric, do you know how many interceptions he threw? Do you have any guess how many picks Jameis Winston threw?
I wouldn't even know.
28.
I was going to guess, honestly, around 30. I'm not even kidding you. But
in two seasons, that's a lot.
It is.
That's a lot. He had 18 picks last year. So when you think about it, is he a risk-reward guy?
Yes. He is not afraid to push the ball down the field, even if it leads to an interception. He's not going to dink and dunk.
Okay. So is that a Mike McCoy type of guy? I don't know that. That's in San Diego. In Chicago, is that the way that the Bears are going to operate? Why would they bring Jameis Winston in? And then you have the whole comments from his attorney yesterday, the lawyer actually over the weekend, about how he's an NFL player on the field. He's not an NFL player off of it. He has work to do, which could be strategy just to shake things up. So there's a lot going on around the NFL, and we'll talk much more about it with Brock Heard here in a couple of minutes. The Diamondbacks last night, they're fun. Eric came in today. We both were saying the same thing. My prediction of 84, I only need 80 more wins a week into the season. I am rolling, man. I'm feeling pretty good. I should have gone to Vegas. Should have done it. Last night, my guy was Ender Inciarte at the plate against the Padres.
1-1, hit well out towards right. Kemp going back, not going to get there. It's going to get down in the gap, and it's going to roll all the way to the wall. One run will score easily. They're going to wave home the second run. It's looking like a two-run triple for Ender Inciarte. It is his third extra base hit of the night, and it's now 8-3 Arizona.
Okay, so the Inciarte had a career-high 4 runs batted in, had a 2-run triple. He did everything well other than Brenly got on his case for eating a banana during the game in the dugout. It was kind of old school. BB was like, I don't care. They had a shot of Inciarte. For you, those of you who are watching the game, you know what I'm talking about. If you didn't, Inciarte's in there challenging, just mashing a banana down in the dugout. And Brenly's like, if you want to mash food down, just go down the tunnel out of sight. It was old school. It's fine. It's fine. Here's Inciarte on his big game at the plate.
I had a good approach the first at bat. You know, maybe I didn't get the pitch I wanted to hit, and I did it. The Gracie and Turner told me not to get out of my approach, so I just did the same thing. Try to hit the ball hard to the middle. He lift that pitch up, and I was able to hit it hard the other way.
All right. There was a couple other things on the game, and then we'll take a break. The Diamondbacks are leading 8-4 in the ninth inning. Eric, did you see this last night?
I did not, but you told me about it.
Jake Lamb stealing a base, leading 8-4 in the ninth inning.
I'm fine with it.
I'm fine with it. They're still in Grand Slam range. Anybody in Berthiaume asked Brenly about it, and I was like, of course it's fine. They're still within slam range. Go get a fifth run. It's fine with that. And then Daniel Hudson closed last night. It wasn't a safe situation. They were up. I shouldn't say close. Addison Reed is their closer for now. Last year on this show, Pedro Gomez, ESPN Baseball Insider, with us every week. He and I vehemently disagree on the number of wins for the Diamondbacks, but that said, last year, Pedro said on this show, wouldn't surprise him to see Daniel Hudson be a closer at some point. I am just merely pointing this out a week into the season. Hudson looked pretty good last night. Now, he's not stretched out. You could also make the argument he'll go back into the rotation at some point. But maybe after all he's been through, and Addison Reed was okay over the weekend. I still don't think I trust him. Sometimes he comes in with a gas can in his hands rather than his glove and ball. And he comes in with matches too. We have a big fire, and that's not good. But could he be a closer at some point? I'm just merely bringing that up. There's a lot to like around the baseball team. I'm going to get to as we move through the show. Oklahoma City or New Orleans, 8th seed in the West. That's all that's left in the NBA. I'll touch on that. I think the NBA office clearly wants New Orleans, clearly. And Greg Popovich may play a role in that. I'm not even going to get into the Suns thing, other than Paul Coral joins us in 40 minutes. NFL talk next, draft preview with Brock Heward on the quarterbacks. Stay with us.
Like our Facebook fan page for unique Arizona sports content from the high schools to the pros. Facebook.com/sports360AZ.
I'm glad the Sun season is ending tonight. What a just absolute disaster. Man, I know in Seattle, Brock joins us now for a couple of minutes. Brock here at ESPN College Football Analyst. You guys would love to have basketball, but just trust me, this has been a train wreck, beyond train wrecks. It's been just miserable. Just please end. We have so much draft stuff to get to, but I'm a tad grumpy today, so just please bear with me. How are you?
I got you. I'm good, man. What do you think is harder? So my daughter just had a sixth grade prom, and it was emotional, man.
Sixth
grade? What do you think is harder?
Wait a second.
Prom? Do you think prom is more difficult and emotional, or the NBA season ending? Have you had a daughter that is to handle prom?
A sixth grade prom, you said? Are you kidding me? Sixth grade?
I'm kidding you. Because I've heard you've gotten soft and sappy in your old age.
Oh,
man.
My gosh.
Crying?
What do you mean old? What are you talking about old? I'm not
old. You're crying over prom. You can't cry over prom.
I don't cry over prom.
NBA?
I have a daughter.
You can't cry over your daughter graduating? Come on, man.
I have a daughter
graduating.
Get out of here. Have any of your kids graduated from high school or college yet? I see your pictures.
You're young, small. Fred, I am young. I got a 12,
know.
A 9,
I
and a
know.
5. I mean, we're living in different worlds.
No, we're not. I have a 10-year-old still. Hey, man.
One part
of me
works
right.
That's
where
it goes. How is life? How are things other than the Suns are stinking and horrible down the stretch?
I tell you what, I got a baseball team down here. I picked 84 wins, and everybody said you're nipping on the cooking, Sherry, and they're 4-3. I mean, come on.
Not a boy.
I'm willing to go out on a limb a little bit. I have a hockey team that's probably going to end up in your city someday. That's just awful, and their season's over, and I don't see any hope for them existing down here. And I don't want to. I hate saying it like that, but I don't believe they have a financial model worth their salt to make it. I have an NFL team that has Brett Hundley in today being worked out. What do you make out of Bruce Arians 2 weeks before the draft bringing Brett Hundley in?
I think you're hearing Brett Hundley's stock is dropping and dropping and dropping. And could he be someone that's there in the mid rounds that is a better talent and prospect than Logan Thomas was in the fourth round last year? Mm. And if so, do you like him better than Logan? Because the one thing you have to do in this league, and you have to give the team that I watch a ton of credit, and we're close to, and that's the Seahawks, is when they make a mistake, they don't try to fake the funk and hide it. They make a mistake, Percy Harvin, okay, 1 year later, we're done. And we're out, even though we're egg on our face and everyone's going to criticize us and we look dumb and what a terrible move. You know, we're not going to try to pretend to make it right. It can't get right. And, you know, we were wrong on that one. We were wrong on a fourth round pick. We'll cut them. We're wrong on a fifth round pick. We'll cut them. We don't just keep guys around to just satisfy our egos and show how we're right all the time. So, you know what? Logan Thomas wasn't what you hoped he could be as a fourth round pick. And you think Hundley's better. Much, much better in the fourth round or fifth round if he falls there. Better to know him and have him in your building and evaluate him than to not do it.
In your opinion, and you've seen Hundley and you've studied all these quarterbacks, all the tape, all your work at ESPN, why would his stock be falling that far?
Because the real question with him is, does he just get it? And I know that's like at the 10,000 foot level, and we can go all the way down to the minute details. But when the ball is snapped, does he just process quickly enough? Does he see the field? Does he just get it? And there's a lot of tape that scares a lot of people, and that's why I think that the stock is tumbling a little bit. And that's the sack reel, and that is the decision making reel at times. And where in college, you can run away from people, and he's very athletic in that sense, and you can get out of some of your trouble. In the NFL, you get eaten alive, and you get spit out, and you get cut, and you're out of the league if you just can't see it and get it. Terrell Pryor, a very gifted, very talented, even bigger and stronger and faster than a Brett Hundley, but, you know, the ball snapped, and can you process quick enough, and can you see what you need to see? I was with a guy named Jim Druckenmiller. Remember that name?
Sure.
Way back when, he could power clean 450 pounds, and he could throw it 80 yards, and, man, he was strong. And he was a late first-round pick of the 49ers.
Yep.
But the problem was, and the challenge in being around him for an offseason, man, do you get it? Does it click? And I'm not talking like reading out the playbook or on the whiteboard. I'm talking when the bullets are flying and things are going, can you process quick enough? And I think that's probably the biggest hurdle that Hundley's tape has to overcome and why I think his stock has been dropping.
When you see him, and we're talking with Brock here at ESPN, college football analyst, good friend of the show, a draft 2 weeks away, a riser, as I referred to him when we first had him on 3 years ago, and he's not plateaued yet, although that...
And a faller now. And
get out of here. Shut up. Get out of here. In a Bruce Arians offense, you see the Seahawks Cardinals twice a year. Can you see Brett Hundley fitting into a Bruce Arians offense?
No, not particularly. Logan Thomas, you saw a little bit because he could really throw it. I mean, he had a kind of a longer wind up, but you saw some of the appeal, which is some of the size. I don't think Brett can spin it in that kind of way, in that kind of, you know, stratosphere at all. And they were willing, like I said a year ago, to take a flyer on Logan in the mid fourth round, and it didn't work. Or, you know, at least conceivably, and when push came to shove at the end of the year, you were still willing to go with Ryan Lindley ahead of a Logan Thomas. So, no, I don't think he can necessarily, you know, throw it in that way, in that capacity. I think he would be better in frankly, a run-first offense. Not a volume, not where it's on the quarterback, not where you got to spray it all over the field and you got to see the whole picture. Run the ball, play action, make a few plays a game. I think he'd be a much better fit in a Seattle offense, per se, mm-hmm. than he would in Arizona offense.
Let's talk about Seattle then. This Russell Wilson talking, no progress, serious about baseball. You're right there. Peel back the onion, go through everything. What's fact? What's fiction?
Yeah, I think the biggest sticking point here, I think both sides are posturing a little bit, and the Seahawks got their chance to do it first, and John and Pete, and we were fortunate enough to kind of have John on, you know, early, and he talked about, hey, you know, Russell gets it, and he's going to be creative and this and that, and now you're hearing, you know, from Russell a little bit, and I think his agent has reached out to a few of the other prominent people in the media, and they're getting their side out. In my opinion, just to cut to the chase of it, when you look at Richard Sherman's deal, when you look at Earl Thomas's deal, when you look at players' deals, and when they've gotten those deals done and signed before they ever went to market, those were extensions. There was a final year on that deal, and then they gave him the big payday, and then they gave him some guaranteed money. And I think that's probably the hang-up right now. Is the Seahawks know they can get Russell at 1.5 this next year. That's your number.
Right.
Your number's 1.5. We'll pay you 20 or 22 or whatever after that for the next four, and we'll guarantee a bunch of it. But, you know, why it's not good business, not prudent for us to just rip that up and all of a sudden give you five for, you know, for a buck 10. You know, we'll give you five for 90, whatever it is, but the first year is going to be the extension. That's how we've done all these other guys.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's where probably some of the sticking point, the two sides are a little bit far apart, and we'll see. Before kickoff, it's more advantageous for Russell, I think, to get it done and get tens of millions of guaranteed dollars in his pocket than it is the Seahawks, who could get him at 1.5, still control his rights, and you know, have all that authority on their side.
All right. So the baseball stuff.
That'd be my sense.
The baseball stuff is just negotiation. There's nothing to that.
I think so, Brad. I'll tell you what. He loves baseball.
Mm-hmm.
And you've been around enough people in your life and in your sphere, and I've gotten to do this for about 6 years on the radio. And the more baseball people I'm around, you just find people that, I mean, truly love it. And once that baseball bug has bit them, that's not one that you can just kind of vaccinate away. I mean, that thing is with them emotionally. And he truly loves the game of baseball. I mean, it was from the very onset and drafted in professional baseball the day I believe his father had passed away. And there is some real emotional connection. So, no, I don't think he's flippant. I don't think it's an agent saying, hey, go out there and play this card. I think he's much more genuine and much more authentic than that. And there is a real fascination. There is a real love affair with the game. But to try to make both work like Deion or Bo or any of these guys did, be a franchise quarterback and do it, not possible.
And Peter King on last week talking about the Philip Rivers Titans angle, and there's been a lot written about mm-hmm. what may happen there. Okay, so today the Chargers are working out Mariota today. If you're a GM, I'm going to put the GM hat on you. Would you trade Philip Rivers to the Titans, and would you take Marcus Mariota if you're San Diego, given where Philip Rivers is in his career? I know you don't see him every week, but would you do it?
Yeah. If I loved and I deemed Marcus Mariota a franchise guy, if I'm wearing that hat, and I think he is. I think Marcus is that kind of guy. I think I build around him. He's shown me nothing from a work ethic, a commitment, a skill set, a toughness, a fortitude, everything that I'm perseverance, everything I want in a franchise guy. He's shown me that. And if I feel that he is that guy, I'd be willing to do it because they know infinitely more about Philip and his health and his mind and where he wants to be. And Philip has maybe come to him and said, or come to that organization and said, hey man, my lifespan here has come to an end. I'm not playing in LA. I'm not an L.A. guy. I'm a Southern guy. I've got like seven kids. I'm going to be back home there when it's all said and done. I love Ken Whisenhunt. Send me there. Let's make this a win-win for everybody. And as long as San Diego deems Marcus Mariota worthy of that, I mean, they have got to make that evaluation, and that can't be a one-week evaluation. They have had to have spent all of the energy and all the time over the last 6 months, 12 months, 18 months to make that decision and really evaluate it. And if they do, I think that's one of those very rare win-win risks that you could take to get a franchise guy back and some, right, and to get a little bit more value back and move a guy to a place that he wants to be with a coach that he wants to play for, and you get your young buck and some other assets to build around. and some opportunity to move it forward, and they've already done it once. They already did it with Drew Brees and into Phillip Rivers.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is, it seems to me that there's got to be a point where the Titans people would have to negotiate a new deal with Phillip, because there's no way Tennessee makes that deal on Rivers' current, and that hasn't happened yet that I'm aware of, and you may have heard differently, but that's got to be worked through. A year ago, you loved Bridgewater. You just absolutely loved Bridgewater. Do you believe?
I do.
And so let's move ahead to this year. Do you love Mariota more than Winston of the two? Which one do you like more?
Yeah. I have some real reservations. Everything that I have heard, and that I've been around there, and I think I called three or four of his games. You walk away from it. And
Winston or Mariota?
Winston.
So you called.
I've done three or four Mariota games and three or four Winston games, just about the same between the two of them. And, I take Mariota. I do. I think he's a better decision maker. I know he's a better athlete. I know he's a better human being. I know both of them have incredible mental and physical fortitude and toughness. But, and Jameis is a more natural passer. I don't think there's much debate about that. He's got really good mechanics. But he's got a lot of other, stuff there as far as treating folks and what you've got to do to be a guy to completely build around. That I feel more comfortable with Marcus in that case, and I wouldn't be surprised at all if Tampa ends up taking through all of this, right? All the back and forth and all the theatrics. And I know, and we had Charles Davis on our show today, and he said 95% chance. That's what everybody, on the national side, McShay and Kuiper, and he's going to go to Tampa. Yeah, he's going to go to Tampa. Though when push comes to ultimate shove there at the very end, I wouldn't be surprised if he ends up in Tampa Bay Mariota.
If you take Winston, you have to be renting, right? I mean, you've got to be renting. You don't know for sure what's going to happen on that one. That's how I look at it, at least.
It's true.
That you can't say that whole organization, whoever takes Winston, everybody, right down to the secretaries, has to be renting, because you don't know. That's the part that would scare. If I'm in that position, there's not a chance I would take him. There's just been too many guys that have fizzled through. I had to sit through. It's a different case, somewhat off the field. Leinart was a knucklehead when he was down here, and it set the organization back years.
You can't
miss that high, and that's why I just...
Here's two I words that I have kind of utilized or have talked about through this process, and that is intentional versus impulsive. A little red flag, or just a little my radar. Just when Jimbo has said that to me about Jameis, he's not a bad kid. He's just impulsive, and I kind of wrote that down on my notes, and I've kind of gone back and looked at my boards and kind of just studied through some of these things. And when I look at today's NFL quarterbacks, you know what I see? Intentional in every single way. Brady, Breeze, Manning, Luck, Wilson. Go through the list. So you don't find impulsive a real trait or characteristic to build around. And that is so much, I think, of what Jameis' personality as a player, as a person, as a leader. He's just a very impulsive kid. And Brett Favre was the last one. He could do it. He could get away with it in his era. And he also had, I think, some seasons that felt real empty because of that impulse. So, for me, I take the real intentional kid in every way.
Stay well. Appreciate your time, as always. Enjoy the sixth grade prom. What did you come up with, sixth grade prom? You just wanted to push my buttons today. I don't know. I have you come on here. I invite you as a guest, and you end up getting me all riled up off the top.
Good.
So.
It's my job.
Yeah. Stay well.
I'll bury the lead.
See ya.
See ya.
It's Brock Heard, ESPN college football analyst. That was really, really good about the impulsive part of Jameis Winston. A little bit of impulsiveness in that position. You have to have that, I would think. You have to have a little bit of it. But if you make impulsive decisions off the field too, and that's evidently what this kid has done. How about Brett Hundley, like late, dropping. He's over at the Cardinals today. So on the other side, more on the Diamondbacks. Paul Coro is coming up in about 30 minutes. I do want to touch, and we do a lot on the site, on sports360az.com. We do pro, we do college, we do high school. There's a big story on the high school front that happened yesterday involving Sammy Duane Jr. You have the number one team in the state, you have the number one recruit in the nation, and you just up and walk. And people have been calling me about that. I'm going to have a little bit of thought on that front and much, much more as we continue on a Tuesday. One of the stories that caught my eye, it actually happened yesterday afternoon. I was out doing my thing. When we get done with this, we go work on stories. We do video, we do audio, we do all sorts of stuff on the site. If you've not checked it out, sports360az.com. I was out, my phone blew up. It was Jared Cohen who called me immediately, part of our staff here. And he said, Sammy Duane Jr. left at Corona del Sol. I have a statement from him. I'm going to put it up on the site. Just thought you'd want to know. Well, my phone continued to blow up because we do a lot. And I'm a hoopaholic. If you're just finding us for the first time, there's a lot of people that are just finding us, which is great. Love the growth and seeing where we are. We just do our thing here every day from 10 to noon. We partner with the Arizona Republic, AZ Central Sports. When Bobby Hurley was hired, it was a pretty big day in terms of people reaching out to me that I hadn't heard from, saying, I'm finally interested in ASU basketball again. What a great hire, this and that. And that was last Friday. Eric, you were actually, we didn't talk about this yesterday. You were at the press conference when Hurley was introduced, and the room was packed from what I heard. I was here.
Yeah, it was. There were people standing along the side walls of the room.
Which we've not seen for anything ASU related. Even when Harden turned pro, I don't think.
I can't remember off the top of my head a crowd that big.
Yeah. So you know, the interest in having Hurley come on board, it's a terrific hire, and the buzz is clearly out there, but Sammy Duane Jr. was the basketball coach at Corona del Sol High School. Corona del Sol has two players right now that, in my humble opinion, will go down as the best two players that I've seen in my 20-plus years at their given position. Marvin Bagley at center is already rated as the number one recruit in the 2017 class. We've not seen that in Arizona ever. There's never been a number one recruit in the country. Alex Barsolo, I wrote this a year and a half ago, and had people that got mad at me about it. But when I see something, I don't impulsively write it, but it's just, he's the best point guard, in my opinion, since Mike Bibby. And he'll probably get past Mike. That's a big, big task for him. He's already been offered by U of A and Virginia, among others. The Corona del Sol just won their second state title. So why would Sammy walk away? And then the lunacy and the nonsense started with he's going to go be Bobby Hurley's assistant at Arizona State. Brad, why aren't you writing about this? Why aren't you tweeting? Because I'm not just going to throw garbage out there for the sake of getting some clicks. You know, I don't need clickbait to do what I do. We don't do that here. We don't need that. We don't need a false headline and just get a bunch of people to click on something that's not right. Doesn't mean we don't make mistakes, but I'm not going to go play that little game. So, you know, we put out the story that had the letter that Sammy Duane Jr. sent to the staff there and at the Tempe School District. Long story short of it, in the last, I don't know, 15 hours, even before today's show, I'm on the phone with lots of people that are calling me wanting to know what's the real story behind it. And Sammy Duane Jr. said, I'm leaving this state power, the best program in the state by far, with these top flight players, because I'm needing a break pretty much. I need to get away from it. And I respect that. And I get that. And I'm going to talk to him later today and put something up on the site because I just want to hear from him. I mean, the two kids that he's leaving, and there's kids, he's got a kid right now that's going to New Mexico, Dane Kuiper, that I don't know why Herb never recruited him. I was given reasons why, and they weren't good reasons. You know, that was one of my biggest frustrations with Arizona State basketball during Herb's era is how many guys Scott Pera had teed up to come to ASU. And Herb would, to his credit, and that's why I said he needs to go to the Ivy League, talk about, we are going to make sure the next 4 years are a great college experience. Well, if you're a high-end player, you don't want to hear that. Fact. If you're a high-end player, you want to come in for a couple of years and you're gone. You know, Sammy, to think that Bobby Hurley would hire Sammy Duane Jr., which would lead to Alex Barsolo and Marvin Bagley going to ASU when Bagley's a freshman and Barsolo's a sophomore, they're 2 and 3 years away, is just lunacy. And then as the day progressed, it was, well, he's going to go to U of A. Yeah, like Sean needs to do that, you know. So on one hand, I appreciate the interest, but you know, the far-reaching fantasy land stuff, we do fantasy football with Michael Fabiano. That's about as much fantasy as we like to do. Bobby Hurley has one spot open on his coaching staff right now. He does have one slot. And I was told yesterday he's got NBA assistants. He's got head coaches in the college ranks that want to get a change, go from a small conference to a big conference, be an assistant coach. He doesn't need to do what Scott Parra did to bring James Harden here. Scott Parra brought James Harden. Scott Parra was with Lute Olson one day. The next day he was with Herb. Herb offered him. Lute didn't immediately. And Scott came and he brought James with him. And that's how the game's played. If Barcelo were a senior, I would put a lot of stock in this. I don't buy it. Don't buy it at all. And, you know, very seldom am I going to use this show to talk about the high school platform. But if you want to get into that, the letter's there, and we'll put some stuff up later today. I'll have an interview with Sammy myself. So it's fine. Over on the Diamondback, before we get to that, this segment brought to you by Santan Ford. Santan Ford, where it is all about you. The Santan Ford experience for me is like this. I was talking to you about yesterday and people calling, all that stuff. Most of them were calling me on my phone as I was driving in my sync support system as I go around and do my day of business when I'm done here with the show. I'm a busy guy. I've got my family life as well. Even last night, I'm sitting by the pool over at a local high school. My son's finishing his swim workouts, and I'm on the phone doing business. Eric and I talk more as I'm driving around than we do in person many days on things that we're working on the show and also on the website. And I've got to have a vehicle that makes a lot of sense for me. I got home yesterday. I must have been driving really smart with my hybrid. 52.5 miles per gallon. 52. Now, when you drive by a gas station and you're sitting there filling up, does it ever just drive you nuts? Or am I the only one saying, why am I spending so much money on gas? The hybrid makes a lot of sense for me, the Ford Fusion hybrid at Santan Ford, just off the Santan 202 in Val Vista. Santan Ford, where it is all about you. Tell you what, I'll save some of this Diamondback stuff for the other side. In about 10 minutes, Paul Coro, final day mercifully for the Suns. Paul brought the sledgehammer today. I think that he brought the sledgehammer out, and it's about time. There's a few more sledgehammers that need to be brought to them. No more fly swatters. No more excuses. 5 years of not making the postseason. Please, somebody, anybody, don't give me the, we're heading down the right path in the right direction. Baseball stuff for the Diamondbacks next.
We're on your mobile phone and tablet at sports360az.com.
When I invite people over to my house for dinner, and I've never done that with Eric. Oh, wait, I think maybe once in 20 years. And you decline because you're getting married or some lame excuse.
And it'd take me 20 years to get to your house.
Yeah, I mean, we can see Tucson from my place. It's fine. When you invite someone over to your house for dinner, and they show up, and they're wearing a shirt that you look at, and you say, well, that's not really appropriate. Let me give you a shirt that is appropriate. That doesn't happen. When somebody puts down their hard-earned money, and they go to a sporting event, and they have a shirt on, unless it has an expletive or sexual innuendo, there is really, in my opinion, absolutely no reason to tell that person you cannot wear that shirt. The Diamondbacks, once again, home game over the weekend. I don't know if they like having the national attention on this. I guess there's worse things to be being ripped on about. If Montini does a full column in the Arizona Republic today, at least you ended up in Montini's column to let people know that your team exists. The casual fan may not know how well you're playing. So it brings attention to them. There's some people that their media strategy is, at least you get your name right, they spell it right, and it's great that we get attention. The only bad attention is when you're in the obituary column. I get it. So the Diamondbacks have a dress code for the Chase Field batter box suite. So you pay $3,000 for a suite, and if you're not wearing the right shirt, they're going to come ask you, because you're on television, to change your shirt. This happened over the weekend, a Dodger fan was wearing blue to one of the games. Why do you care? You should just be happy that anybody comes to your games at this point, the way that things have been. You know, Montini wrote, you're better than this. And I like to have my own original thoughts. It's not often that I sit here. I'll always praise writers when they do things that are well thought out. But I think EJ spoke exactly what I was thinking when he wrote it, what I was thinking when I heard about this. Like, again? Let's not go back. You know, I think their strategy over there is pretty sound now. For the first time, baseball is more important than all the other stuff. I don't care about churro dogs myself, but I get it. Baseball needs to generate interest. People like food. They like to see all this stuff. I don't know. Call me old-fashioned. I kind of wanted to see the team win. I picked them to win 84. I've had some people that have said today and even last night, you need to do something on the show with it. I don't know. Hey, Jared Nielsen, can we put a clock up? Jared's our technical director. Can we put like a, I don't know, can we do something on the screen behind me where we have like a number every day and I just rip it off, you know, count down? Do we have like a tick-tock, tick-tock? What, we're at 80 today? So, you know, I'm focused on the field here. But a fan of a team who decides to go pay $3,000 to sit in a seat, and there's the fan, okay, and there's the usher that's talking to the fan. Please remove your shirt. I don't know. Instead of putting him in a Diamondback shirt, just have him there bare-chested for the whole game. I think that'd be fun. Why not?
Painted with a big L.A. on his
chest
or a big A,
sure.
A big Sedona red
Sedona,
A?
Sedona, paint his whole chest red. Look, if you're going to show up wearing Dodger colors, let's just paint you red. Here's part of the commitment here for your $3,000. Again, it's probably something in a boardroom behind closed doors that the organization loves getting this type of free attention. Has to be. There's no other reason to do this. I mean, it's petty. It's just petty. Can I see the Cardinals doing this? Is there a seat as prominent at an NFL game? Or they get shown a lot in an NFL game? Probably not. Coyote games? Well, nobody's at those games, so it doesn't matter. They're just empty seats anyways. Suns games? I don't. Fans wear jerseys at Suns games. Nitwit Laker fans, when their team is good, show up. And then when their team blows like it does right now... This will be the worst season, by the way, in the history of the Lakers if they lose tonight, from what I read. And all these nitwit Laker fans will show up once they're relevant again. They're not relevant now. They're a bunch of bandwagoners. Oh, don't pick on my team. Who's your team? I don't have a team. I don't care. Just give me a good story. So this whole thing with the Diamondbacks, when it goes over to mainstream, it's probably good for business. It probably makes people aware that they exist. The team itself last night, it was fun to watch them. It's fun to watch them. I like De La Rosa. He thought he had a better outing. Was it though, Eric? His numbers, his ERA is like almost 8.
It's over 7. It's somewhere in the 7s, but he's 2-0. Go figure.
Well, that's fine. And Peter will be with us. Peter King and Peter and I go back and forth. He's a Red Sox guy. He wanted to know about the Wade Miley thing, and I was asking about De La Rosa. He said De La Rosa will drive you crazy with his control. Bingo, you win. So far, he's gone right down the path that you've said. But they're not an easy team to pitch to. In the field, I've seen very few. I was so busy this morning, I didn't even look. I don't remember how many errors they even have this year. There's not many. They've been smart with the ball. They know how to manufacture runs. Goldschmidt already has 2 stolen bases. It's a week into the season. And the thing is about watching them, to me, there's going to come a tipping point at some point this year with Tomas being paid $70 million to be down in Reno right now. They're paying Tomas $70 million. That can't happen all year. I mean, maybe it could with this new television contract. Maybe it could. But $70 million to sit down on the farm. So what could happen? Well, he can't play third. Give him a fork, and it sounds like that's how he plays defense. You know, he doesn't know how to use his glove at third. You're not going to play him at first, obviously, with Goldschmidt. You're going to pay a guy $70 million to be an every other day or every third day player? Doesn't feel like it. But what do you do with Pollock, Inseyarte, and Trumbo? To me, it feels like as the season progresses, maybe you try to find your way out of the Trumbo deal. Maybe. But if you're looking for starting pitching, because I'm not going to sit here and sugarcoat it, their starting pitching is not very good. De La Rosa did a fine job last night, but like Eric said, it is an ERA of 7. My point is they've got some assets and some things that they could do. I think Daniel Hudson's kind of a wild card. Could he close? I think Pedro brought that up last year. If he can close, he looked good last night. So it's fun, though. It's fun. They're 4-3. I'll take that after a week. After the slop I've seen the last few years. Speaking of slop, we have to talk about the Suns next with Paul Coro. I'm Brad Sussmat. It's a good Tuesday. Why do I know it's a good Tuesday? Because the Sun season is over after today. Thank God. What a disaster. A little bit later on, after the show's over, we're going to do something with Sammy Duane Jr. because that's what we do here at Sports 360 AZ. I'm just going to sit in front of a camera and ask him what happened. Because that story impacts college basketball, and it's just the fabric of what we do. You know, we are not Walmart here. We're Whole Foods and Sprouts. We aim higher. That's what we try to do here. So we'll have some of that stuff up on the site later today. Brett Hundley's visiting the Cardinals today. Brock Huard weighed in on that earlier. We'll have that up on the site later today. And why would the Cardinals look at him? And why is his stock dropping as quickly as it is? And again, the Diamondbacks will play tonight. But our focus now turns to Paul Coro, AZ Central Suns insider. I certainly hope that the AZ Central folks have a very good package for hazard pay, because for the fifth year in a row, Paul has had to watch a lot of bad basketball. But in all seriousness, on the frustration scale for you, do you ever get frustrated as a writer with the product that you're watching, as though you know how it ends, like the boat sinks at the end of the Titanic?
I don't know. I think I have a different perspective than fans. I don't have a rooting interest in it. I'm looking at the what's interesting, what's intriguing, trying to find the best, most coveting story. So sometimes bad is interesting. Sometimes 28-20 to 39-42 is a fascinating turn. Not necessarily always enjoyable. Sometimes maybe my personal work frustrations are more with individuals, and you know, this is a young team, and I've dealt with a lot of more mature professionals in the past than the likes of Steve Nash and Grant Hill and all those guys. So that might be the difference.
What is interesting and intriguing then about this year's team that finishes tonight against the Clippers? What have you found interesting and intriguing?
You know, the whole chemistry idea versus, the metrics of a team, the numbers, the stuff on paper that is built on potential, how you have to factor in the human element to all that, you know, how guys like Ish Smith and Deontay Christmas at the end of a bench really impact a team without getting more than 2 points a game, you know, how Channing Frye might have a value beyond just being a big man who can shoot threes because of, you know, his experience and his maturity and his wisdom. You know, that kind of stuff is interesting to see how it unfolds, because now you've been left with a team you're looking around going, who is even a future leader on this team? Who's the ones that are going to step up later on? You understand that this is a team mostly of 25 and under guys, but you're also looking for, okay, who's the ones who get it already? Who's the ones who put in the work ethic? And those are tough ones to spot, to be frank.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, what you're reading between the lines, you don't see much of that, if any of that, on this year's team. I'm not putting words in your mouth, but that's essentially what you're saying.
There's certain guys, but they also have to become better players too. You know, it's hard to lead from the bench. not that these guys are on the bench, but and some of them we haven't seen much of. Brandon Knight has a lot of ability to become a leader of this team. But he's 23 years old and he barely got here. He played 11 games after getting here, and he hasn't really established himself as a top NBA player yet. But he has the sort of maturity and intelligence and court intellect and work ethic and all those intangibles that make up a leader to do so. And he has no problem speaking up, which, you know, over the course of the season, that's been one of the issues, especially defensively, that you know, that the coaching staff is always pleading with these guys to talk more. Mm-hmm. And that hadn't happened.
Paul Corazi, Central Suns Insider. What does this team do well?
You know, they have improved defensively as the year goes on, but that had more to do with the change in lineup that was prompted by injuries. You know, putting P.J. Tucker at a two-guard, I don't think anybody thinks that's, you know, the future of the team to have P.J. Tucker as a two-guard, but it shored up their defense and their rebounding to have a little bit bigger lineup with Marcus Morris at three and P.J. at two and Alex Len at the five. So, you know, there's been some defensive progress there. You know, I think they've got the right coaching staff in place.
I would agree with that. And the people that have been wondering about Jeff and all this, I think is completely ill-founded and unfair.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's part of what I wrote about today. He was dealt with some pretty much impossible circumstances to succeed this year, starting with the makeup of the roster and the trying to make a three-point guard lineup work and, you know, all the people that were unhappy with their roles early on the season because of that roster dynamic. And then you get into the midseason and, you know, from the Anthony Tolliver trade in December to the one for Brandon Wright to the three trades at the February deadline, you know, half the roster was different by the middle of the season. And he was supposed to keep this playoff boat flowing. And then even when he still has a chance at the end, then he loses Alex Len and Brandon Knight, two of his starters to injury. So, you know, I'm sure there are lots of ways that he would like to improve too. And there's ways he could. He's a second year coach who had probably a honeymoon last season to jump 23 games. And I think he has a lot of leeway in this town too, because of everybody knows his reputation.
Sure.
From the time he was drafted.
Sure. I mean, he has a lot of leeway in this town, but does he have a lot of leeway with this owner and this president? I mean, I don't know. You brought the sledgehammer out today. And I thought what you wrote today was terrific. And, you know, you're not looking for praise on it, but it needed to be said and pointed out the ineptitude of this front office through the trades that they've made. Can this front office figure it out from your view?
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of like with Hornacek. Last year, Hornacek was coach of the year runner-up for a reason, because he did a great job and he didn't forget how to coach because his roster is different. Now, McDonough was executive of the year runner-up last year because he made some brilliant trades and got Bledsoe in for next to nothing and stole Gerald Green and Plumlee and a pick from the Pacers. And, you know, there were several good deals, and that worked. And he tried some more. They didn't work. Now, you know, no GM's going to bat 100%, and he's probably learning a lot from the mistakes. And but I don't think anybody really questions his aptitude or his work ethic as a GM or the whole front office. I mean, it's not just him. It's his assistant GMs, Trevor Buckstein and mm-hmm. Pat Conley and those guys and the scouting guys.
How about above him, though, Paul? How about Lon's situation here? How much longer does Robert sit with this? Or is Robert just fine with this?
That would be a curious one, because it's kind of a call on both sides at this point. You know, Lon Babbitt doesn't need a continue with a career if he wanted to. He's got family and grandkids and stuff like that he could be spending more time with. I think he had thought that if he had spent this long with the organization that they would have got back to the playoffs, and it would have been made a good feeling to part. If I had to guess, I wouldn't say he stays in the same capacity, but maybe he stays in some capacity. You know, it's still connected to the franchise, but not with his hands on it every day. Certainly he's the things he's had expertise in as far as being a negotiator and things like that with his lawyer background probably have been passed on to Ryan over these 2 years.
Mm-hmm. Which is fine. I mean, I guess I'm looking at it. I haven't heard from Robert. You're there every day. Has Robert talked to you about this? Will Robert sit down and say how in God's green earth it has gotten back to this, where 5 years in a row they haven't made the postseason? And yeah, they made progress last year, but I think you and I talked about this last year. They could very easily have slid back this year, even when they were having their success last season, and they didn't make the playoffs last year. So yeah, it was fine, but it's still a non-playoff team. It's like watching the Warriors or the Wizards for years and years and years. That's what we've turned into here in Phoenix.
You know, and the toughest part about this is the Western Conference is brutal.
Sure.
I never thought this was going to be a playoff team from the beginning of the season. Never thought it. You know, the same eight teams, you know, if the Thunder hang on over the Pelicans, the same eight teams that were in it last year are going back, and the Pelicans got better. Next year, it's going to be worse. All those teams are going to be good, and now Utah has been one of the best teams in the league since the All-Star break. Minnesota, if they ever get healthy, is going to be better. You know, you can go down the
Lakers.
The,
Lakers will get players. The Lakers will eventually.
They'll spend money. Yeah. They will always spend money. Yeah. You know, they can do it much like how the Mavericks have always stayed relevant. Just keep throwing money at the problem until you win. I thought there could have been progress this year without making the playoffs, because there still would have been a good feeling about young guys developing and maturing and moving forward. Now, part of the problem, I think, on the outside isn't just that they've taken a step back here at the end of the season, but people don't feel attached to this team.
No.
Last year, they loved how they busted their butts and surprised them and flew all over the floor and filled it up with threes and alley-oops and all that. And, you know, I go around the league this season, and I see Suns jerseys in the crowds. They're not of any of the players on this team. They're of Steve Nash. They're of Charles Barkley.
Sure.
They're of guys gone past, Goran Dragic. And so there's just not somebody on this team yet that they can sell and feel attached to.
I only have a couple of minutes, so I can't run through every player, because there's questions around a lot of the players from my view. Like, Gerald Green has turned into this enigma. The agent of Gerald Green. I'm done with both the Morrises. I like where Len is. I don't know if Bledsoe can be a leader. I see Isaiah Thomas is going to make the playoffs. And I mean, it's just like one thing after the other. From your view, though, as you sit there, what are the biggest question marks in terms of the roster with the season wrapping up tonight, moving forward?
I think it's pretty clear that they got to go out and get from it. Their star that's taking them to the next level isn't on this team right now. He's playing somewhere else probably, and, you know, they're going to have to find a way to get him probably through a trade. You know, drafting another guy in the middle of the round and developing him probably isn't going to be the route that takes them to the next level.
Right.
They need somebody like Kevin Love to want out of Cleveland, or DeMarcus Cousins to want out of Sacramento, or something like that. Because they definitely need frontline help too. I mean, they're just,
What is the attraction of those players coming here? You know, that's the thing, is what is the attraction of Phoenix now? If you're those guys,
yeah.
If you're LaMarcus, I have fans say, well, get LaMarcus Aldridge. Why in God's green earth would he come to Phoenix? He's to win a title. They're not a title contending team.
Yeah, I don't think he leaves Portland, but I get your point about Phoenix not necessarily being the destination in a lot of people's eyes right now. You know, money always will speak over everything, but we're talking about guys that probably already have their contract.
Right.
You know, that's why trades are better to resurface your franchise, because you're not really giving those guys an option when you trade for them. You know, would Eric Bledsoe have picked Phoenix over any other market if the Suns hadn't traded for him?
No.
And had his restricted free agency rights? You know, probably not. He probably would have gone to a different market. So that's the kind of the position they're in. You know, supposedly around the league, Phoenix is still, you know, as a city, a place where people would like to go. You know, and we'll see how the other dynamics change. I think players would like to play this style, at least the style they were playing for the first half of the season, maybe not the second half. And that's attractive to people too.
Before I let you go, MVP vote is due tomorrow night from you?
Yes.
And
put it off as long as I can.
So from my view, Harden hasn't had Dwight Howard for most of the season, but Harden doesn't like to play defense. I like James a lot, but he's out there as a matador. Steph Curry, to me, seems to be the guy. Where are you leaning with your vote?
Yeah, I haven't really divulged this, but I will tell you that I'm voting for Steph Curry.
Breaking news, dun-dun-dun.
And, you know, that's probably no big thing around the league, because he's probably going to win it, and probably handily, even though it's considered close. I think he'll win it pretty handily. But, you know, you mentioned about Harden defense. Steph Curry, what Steph Curry's done this way as a two-way player, with the influence of Steve Kerr and Rod Adams there on the staff, you know, he was a guy that was hidden defensively in the past. Now he's guarding the best players in the league every night and still taking his offense to another level. It's pretty special. he's a special player, and it's sickening to everybody in Phoenix to think about how they thought they had him on draft night that one night. But he's a guy you can pull for. I think that's probably helps him in voting too. Not that the beard isn't the most likable guy, but I think Steph Curry's like every mother out there would probably want their kid to marry Steph Curry if they could.
Sure.
He's that good of a guy.
Sure. I'll let you go off that. Hey, I know you just made it through another season, and I'll just say this, dad to dad, I really appreciate how hard you work at your gig and what you put out every day and how well you do it and also find balance. I see that every day in what you do. So just one dad to another, good job. I'll talk to you soon.
I appreciate that a lot. Maybe we'll get back to more relevancy someday.
You got it. There's Paul Coro for a couple of minutes.
See you, Brad.
You got it. AZ Central Suns Insider.